The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I'm Rick Welch, and to my right is Rick Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Behind the glass is Rocket Man Andy Bishop. And we don't have Ralph Hicks. We don't have Sarita Edgerton. We don't have Cherry Lewis. We don't have Billy Kimsey.
I think it's easier to just say who we do have at this point.
Bunch of losers.
Being very secluded.
So we have to remind everybody, this is going to be the last week that Sarita's not here. The vote is next week, and that's the primary for the Republican Party in South Carolina. And if she wins, then
she'll have a lot more campaigning.
We probably no, actually she won't, because there is not an opposing seat.
There's not an opposing. I forgot about that.
It's like a shoe-in. So whoever wins the Republican primary wins the seat. But if she wins, I don't know how much that she can be a part of this podcast. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. How often does a congressman have to go to the state house?
No, absolutely no idea.
Yeah, see, that's why I didn't run. That's one of the reasons.
I run from government.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not for.
Billy Lewis is helping a very dear friend of his move into a new home that they just bought. So he's being a very helpful, nice guy. So he can't be here. Cherry is on sabbatical. I think Cherry might be back at the end of July. I'm not sure. But so Cherry's going to be out at least until July in the studio, at least. And then Ralph Hicks is traveling down to see some family in Alabama. So that's why we are sans those four. And today I'm super excited.
Yes.
Super excited. Yes. This guest, I met her through Bobby Cruikshank, I believe. Miss Kristen Brooks Barton.
Now you got to do it over. You mispronounced my name.
All right, here we go. Our guest. Kirsten.
Remember we talked about cutting things out?
Yeah. Watch this, Andy.
We're totally leaving that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Rick screwing up her name has to stay in.
Weird part is that I have said Kirsten to my wife like 1,000 times.
You said it to me when you introduced her like 6 minutes ago. You said the correct name. I recall.
My dear, dear friend, whose name I will not pronounce correctly.
What's that from?
Ratio.
I cannot remember.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's from a movie. Yeah. Well, anyway, sorry.
So anyway, that's why those four aren't here. But I'm super excited about today because I have our guest, Kirsten Brooks Barton. Hello.
Hey.
Now, wasn't it Bobby? Well, it was Robert Cruikshank that introduced us, right?
No, you just said that you were watching my YouTube channel.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's the one that told me about your YouTube channel.
But we know the same people, yeah.
We all know the same people, yeah. She has a YouTube channel called KB Scrupulous Berean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. And I think you have maybe 8 to 10 videos up.
Yeah. It's nothing special right now.
It's in the works. It's very honest, which is something that I really like. So I've schnookered her in to come up here in studio and share her testimony today. So we're going to be hearing a lot about
Don't look
you.
At me. I don't know the story.
Come on. Tell me all about her. So every guest that I have on, Kirsten, I always ask the same question. To the best of your ability, can you tell me of the earliest memory that you have of when you heard the name Jesus Christ?
When I was little.
Okay.
My family, they are Christian prominently. My grandparents, they raised me and they always had me in church. And when I was little, I did things like I said, the sinner's prayer and things like that. But I didn't grow up in church. I just went to church occasionally.
Okay. Yeah. Kind of like... there's a name for them. The Christmas and Easter crowd, what do they call them?
Yeah.
The Keisters. The Keister Christians, they come around Christmas and Easter time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, so you grew up knowing about God and knowing about Jesus, like it was common. And where did you grow up at, and like what state?
So I'm originally from Pennsylvania. That's where I was born.
Okay.
I moved from Pennsylvania, that's where I'm from, to Morganton, North Carolina, because my grandfather worked for Caterpillar and they relocated. And I started high school there. I was 14. And then I started to get into drugs probably about 9th, 10th grade, started smoking weed.
Was this because of the move, you think?
No.
No.
It's just, I think when you do drugs, it helps your social life. Mm-hmm. You know, like I was a very shy, introverted person. So when I did drugs, it made me feel included and
right.
came out of my shell, things like that.
Sure.
Then I started partying more my junior and senior year, and I started getting in trouble. I got in trouble in my junior year. I brought weed to school.
Mm.
That was really smart, intelligent.
Yeah. But listen, that's I saw it when I was in high school. It wasn't like people didn't bring it. I mean, they just didn't get caught.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got caught. Eventually, I got expelled, and I went to what you call, it's an alternative school
mm-hmm.
For bad kids. So I went there, and when I was there, I got into drugs even more. That's when I started to use like Oxycontin and Percocet, things like that. I would buy cocaine under the stalls. It was, yeah.
At the school?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So wow. Instead of helping you recover, let's put you where it's even worse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was 20 times worse, alternative school. Mm. But I graduated by the grace of God, and I'm very thankful for that. And I got hooked on painkillers, Percocets, Vicodin. It escalated into Oxycontin, and eventually it escalated into me shooting up.
Mm.
What year was like, you know, high school for you or late high school? I'm just kind of trying to contextualize it in my brain with the crimes committed by the people that pushed Oxycontin out of doctor's offices like candy because it was like, it was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm just trying to put it in my brain and like approximate. It doesn't have to be exact.
I started doing Oxycontin probably in like 2009. That's when I started to get hooked.
That's the time. It really became pervasive and real easy to get. And that was an active campaign by,
I saw it. I saw a documentary about this.
Yeah. It was a thing people did on purpose.
They were pushing it.
Yeah. Because the people that make it, knew it would sell, you know. It's a thing that they did to this country on purpose.
Oh, it's wild. It's horrible.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. I agree. So I started shooting up, and then just as time went on, it just progressed into worse things like cocaine, crack, meth. Things like that. But I always stayed hooked on opiates. I was always a slave to opiates because the thing was I tried them, but nobody told me that you could get addicted to them. It was just like, here, try this. And it was like, oh, this feels so good. And I want to do that again. Mm-hmm. And then you just want to keep doing it because it feels so good. You want that feeling to come back. And then eventually I got to a point where I went a couple days without one. And you don't feel right mentally or physically, like you literally get addicted. Your body chemistry changes and you feel horrible coming mm-hmm. off of them. And it's not just like a one-day hangover. I mean, this can last for weeks, months. I mean, it's not easy to kick. So that's why people get addicted. That's why they stay hooked. That's why people are, you know, all these methadone clinics are packed because of this addiction. They can't get free from it. And so I always stayed on opiates, but then I experimented with other things, like I said, coke, crack, meth, all that nice stuff. I held a job down, and I had a really nice job working at Leviton Manufacturing for about 5 years, and it was a third shift job. So that's when I really started to get into, I was still doing the pills, but I was like nodding out at my machine and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I need to stay up. It was from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And so it started with Adderall. I would go on break and get Adderall from this girl. which is like an ADHD medication. It's like an amphetamine. Then it escalated to cocaine. And then cocaine's really, you know, at that time it was really hard to get. So meth was the easiest thing to get and the cheapest thing to get, and it lasts the longest. So it went from snorting to smoking to shooting really quick, and it escalated.
Wow. Is this something you would do at work?
I would do it on break.
On break.
Yeah. And I would go into work. Wow. And it ruined my entire life.
Yeah. Now, so since you've just openly started talking about this, I have some questions because I have encountered people, you know, people that I've like have worked at my shop in the past, and I am the most naive person in the world. I believe lies pretty simply, and if somebody tells me, hey, I can't do this right now because of this, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm just like, I think that they're being honest with me. And I started learning that there was a lot of, there was some similarities between some of these people that were using and the way their excuses developed.
Right.
Did you do the same? Did you start developing like excuses?
Absolutely.
So you start creating these narratives, and the reason why you couldn't be at work or the reason why you nodded off wasn't because, or, but whenever you started on meth, you weren't nodding off anymore, I imagine.
Right. Yeah, I would actually stay after work and get up with people that I was working with, because other people would smoke meth there too. And we would just go after work and smoke, you know. And I was dating a guy, and I was actually in love with him, but he didn't do drugs. So it was really hard. He knew that I was hooked on pills, and at this time, I got on a prescription called Subutex.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Suboxone?
I have heard of Suboxone.
So it's like, it's just like Suboxone, but it's like in a pill form.
I have a couple of employees that are using, it's sort of like a methadone kind of an idea.
Yeah.
They go to a clinic.
Yeah.
And then they take this medication, and it helps, well, it keeps them addicted to something.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as the meth, I suppose.
Right. No, it's not. So at the time, my boyfriend, he knew that I was, you know, on the Subutex and things like that, but he didn't know how out of control I was, and I just got into a couple different situations where I was completely out of control, and everybody knew it. And so he left me.
Can I ask you a question? What does that mean? When you say out of control, what can you give me like an example? You don't have to get deep, but I'm just curious what that means. Like mentally you just, out of control?
You literally, like I don't remember hardly any of it. Like I black out.
Oh.
It got to the point where my friends had to call my grandparents, and we literally had to have like an intervention. And I was speedballing and things like that. It was really bad.
What is speedballing?
I was doing, I was taking Xanax and methamphetamine at the same time.
Wow. So Xanax, so you're taking a prescription pill like Xanax, but then you're also smoking meth.
It's a combination of an upper and a downer is usually a speedball.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was getting into things like that to where you would notice my behavior was very erratic.
So, but so forgive me. I'm sorry because I'm ignorant. What's the benefit of the speedball? Like what, for the getting of high, like what's happening to you?
So the thing is with Xanax, you black out.
Okay.
So the plan was not to do meth, but when you do Xanaxes, or when you take Xanaxes, I'm sorry, when you take Xanaxes, all kinds of crazy stuff happens. Like it's like being, I guess it's like being drunk, but it's worse.
Yeah.
And it just makes you do all kinds of
so
crazy.
So you're fully functioning, but you're blacked out.
Right. Exactly.
So you're like, you're running on this, your baseline functions. Or are you like completely, like if you're blacking out?
Almost like a zombie.
I've always been surprised by the use of Xanax as a recreational drug. Because if you give me a half a milligram of Xanax, it's nap time, baby.
Yeah.
It's nap time. And that's a half milligram, like straight up.
Now, like, I know people like, so I went to a wedding one time and the bride was like freaking out. And so one of her bridesmaids gave her a half of a Xanax and she like happily went through the wedding. It was the most remarkable thing I ever saw. I was like, what?
Yeah.
That works?
Oh, yeah.
It just super chilled him out. It's kind of like giving a dog the CBD drops, you know? Like, it's thunderstorming, you give her a drop, all of a sudden the dog doesn't care, and it's just like, chill.
There's drugs like that. I mean, opiates are like that, too, with pain. It's just, there's a cause. So, but there are drugs that
do exactly what they say on the label.
So she's taking a Xanax and then blacking out. So let me say it like this. Like, I used to drink a lot, and so I used to black out. And then the next day, people would tell me all the things that I did.
Yep.
And I didn't even realize I was doing it. But they said the weird part was is I never really talked. Like, I was just doing the things. I wasn't talking.
Right.
So I guess that part of my cognitive ability didn't work. But I was like, taking all my clothes off and running down the street. Like, I could do that, no problem. But I couldn't speak. So you're taking this Xanax, you're blacking out, but then when you're blacking out, you're making a cognitive decision to do meth?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, but that's what's happening,
right? I ended up doing things like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that ends up in... Because when you're down, you want to go up. If you get too down, you want to go up. And if you get too high, you want to come down. That's why people speedball.
Okay, that's why.
Yeah.
It's to control... You want to try to be in the mid.
Right, exactly. But still be high. Yeah, you get... Unfortunately, you get too out of control.
You want to be normal, and you're doing it with drugs.
What a great way to do it. Yeah, that's. I guess that's it. Sorry. So let's say...
Because I would assume from the fact of so much usage, you've gotten so high, so down, and now you're just trying to get back to a normal.
Right.
So now you're trying to adjust it with the uppers and the downers.
Yeah. And so my ex-boyfriend, he... broke up with me, of course. I stayed with my grandparents. They had like this big intervention thing. They ended up taking my car, stuff like that, which, you know, I understand why. They bought the car for me, so legally they could take it away, but they had to legally have me sign it over because I was not, you know, competent enough to drive a vehicle.
Yeah.
And they were just trying to save me, and I wasn't ready to quit. So my mother, she lives in Myrtle Beach, and they tried to literally kidnap me and take me to Myrtle Beach to where I could live and get sober, and I was not ready. I went down there twice to try to do it, and I was not ready. Mm-hmm. The second time, my mom and my stepdad, they drove me down to Myrtle Beach to get sober. They literally kidnapped me. I tried to run away, and they kidnapped me, put me in the car, and we went down there. They were trying to keep me safe because they love me. And I mean,
when you kidnap, trust me, it's always love.
Yeah, always.
Statistically, that might literally be
true. It could be true.
Yeah, statistically, that might literally be true.
So when I was staying at her house... I was not ready to get sober. That was their choice. It was not my choice at the time. It was not my desire to get sober. I would literally walk to the Dollar General because it's right near my house, right near her house.
How many did you pass before you got to the one you wanted?
Oh, the Dollar General.
There's so many of them.
It's literally like right across the street from my neighborhood. And I would buy like a bottle of wine. And I remember I walked back and I was just like sitting under this tree drinking a bottle of wine.
Wow.
And that's how much of an addict I was. It wasn't just pills. It was everything.
Yeah.
I was always craving. I had to have this or that. I mean, it was always. And I always ended up going back to Morganton because that's what I knew. That's where everything was at. That's where my friends were at. Those were my hookups. You know, I was familiar how I got drugs, everything. But Myrtle Beach, I didn't know anybody. And so went back to Morganton, and I ended up trying to commit suicide a couple times.
Wow.
I would say at least 3 failed suicide attempts.
So what's going on? Is it because you can't? Because the drugs have such a powerful grip on you.
And that's part of it, yeah.
Okay.
That was part of it. Just going through a really rough time.
Yeah.
The third time, my third suicide attempt, this is really horrible, but I would try to take like Tylenol PMs. Mm-hmm. So I took like, it was over 40.
Mm. Wow. Eesh.
And it was horrible. It was the scariest thing that I ever went through. And as soon as I took them, you know, like 30 minutes later, I was really scared. And I was like, I don't want to die. But I didn't know the Lord at all. And I had to stay home from work for a couple days. And I was like literally in my bed throwing up like green stomach bile. Like it was disgusting. It was horrible.
Mm.
Did you have to get your stomach pumped, or did you just
Nobody knew about it.
Wow, you just took them.
Nobody knew about it. I didn't tell anybody, and I survived it. And, you know, I praise the Lord, because I was, like, in a really dark spot, really dark place, and I didn't know the Lord. If I would have died, you know, I would not be in heaven. I thought I knew the Lord. You know, I said the sinner's prayer. That's another thing I'd love to go through. So, yeah, then I think after that, I told my mom, I said, I want to move, and I'm ready to get sober. I can't do this anymore. I have to get away from this. It was just like the walls were closing in on me, and I was ready. And I believe the Lord put it in my heart because he's sovereign. And I'd never wanted to get sober before in my entire life, ever. I mean, I was that hooked. Nobody could separate me from drugs except it has to be God. Because nobody, there's nothing anybody could do to persuade me.
You know you better than anybody knows you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a real fiend. Like, I was a real addict.
Yeah.
You can ask anybody. I was horrible.
Yeah.
And I had a horrible reputation for it, unfortunately. But, I moved to Myrtle Beach July 27th, 2018. And I've been clean ever since.
Yeah.
Coming up on 6 years, all substances, no alcohol, no drugs, no meth, nothing.
So the beach did save you.
Oh, geez.
They save people, places, and things.
Absolutely.
But I feel like even if you're in a different place, if you really want it bad enough, you can go get it.
Yeah. Did you just say that nouns can save you?
Yes.
Tell them what you meant. People, places, and things.
Oh, people. Okay, so it's like a Narcotics Anonymous or an AA thing.
Yeah.
They want you, you know, stay away from your usual people and your places. So
and
they
the
say,
normal and the things that you did, or
yeah, people, places, and things. So it's like I separated myself from those people, from those places, and from those things.
Wow, yeah, that's awesome.
Self-explanatory, but yeah.
It's funny you say that about Myrtle Beach, because I was thinking that when you said Myrtle Beach, because I have known people in my life, like, I don't know how they do this. You could drop them in a random city they didn't even speak the language in. They could get drugs. Those people. It is wild to me. Like, it's almost a magic power. I have no idea how it works.
Yes.
But I've seen people, yeah, you could put them in a foreign country. And at like 3 a.m., they could find drugs.
Yeah, if you want them bad enough, you'll find them. It doesn't matter. But this time it was different. The desire was completely gone. Mm-hmm. I always had a craving. I always had a desire. I always had to go back. You know, like that saying, a dog goes back to its vomit.
Yeah.
That was me every single time. And this time something was different. And so I attributed it to God. Mm-hmm. I lived in Myrtle Beach, and I started to go to church there. I went to a Baptist church, a local Baptist church. It was just different. It was just, you know, I had no really interest in it, but I just started to go. Background-wise, I've always been into, like, heavy metal and rock and roll and things like that. I dated a guy who was in, you know, who did seances. And so I've always loved horror movies, you know, so I've always had that.
Sounds like we would all have a great time, actually. Minus the drugs. Everything else sounded fine.
I was thinking that. I was like,
heavy metal, rock and roll, and horror Sam's movies. And
got the 200-inch movie screen on the side of the studio.
Yep.
If we bring people over, the thing to show is horror. That's always the best group watch.
I grew up watching going to drive-in theaters with horror movies.
Yeah. So, minus the seances, everything else sounded great.
Yeah, I was into like Hellraiser and Freddy Krueger, the old stuff, the old school 70s, 80s. Yeah, that was my stuff.
Are you tired of compromising when it comes to protecting your valuable firearms? Then let us tell you about Carolina Cases, your ultimate destination for hard plastic, impact-proof pistol cases. Carolina Cases are TSA approved and are crafted with high-quality foam, ensuring maximum protection for your firearms during transport or storage. At Carolina Cases, they understand the importance of safeguarding your investments. Carolina Cases provide unparalleled, durability, keeping your pistol safe from impact and damage. So hop on over to www.carolinacases.net to explore their wide range of pistol cases designed to meet your specific needs. Don't settle for less. With Carolina Cases, you can ensure your firearms are safely stored, preserve your peace of mind, and protect what matters most. Enter code BUROWS at checkout to receive free shipping.
Yeah, so I came from that kind of background. My whole life, I was totally just, I consumed that, like, air.
Just ate darkness.
Yeah, just consumed darkness.
Yeah.
And so going to church was really different. It was really boring.
Yes.
I had no desire. But it was just kind of like, it's the thing that I'm supposed to do.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah. Andy has a famous saying about church. He's like, if you're trying to sell a product, you're doing a terrible job.
Yeah.
You know what you said? Like, it's a hard sell.
I mean, it requires a little more specific setup that yeah. I don't remember.
That's absolutely true. But, I mean, they are trying to sell a product.
Yeah. If you're trying to sell me a product, it's terrible.
I said it was about me specifically, too.
Yes.
So I said, if you're trying to sell me a product, that's not how you do it.
Yeah.
You're
the
not.
Church. It's not.
You don't pressure sell.
Well, it's not the pressure sell. I don't want to get like, re-talk about this. It's in a podcast and I don't want to take her time. But it's more about the product being advertised. Like the if you want to get me personally, like this exact me, I don't believe in a higher power. So if you talk to me about that, it's just kind of like, all right, fine. So you got to like lead with other community and et cetera.
We've talked about that in the past. You know,
yeah, like, I don't want to eat up her time telling
stories.
No, you're
not eating up my time.
Listen, it's more important that we talk to Andy right now. No, anyway. Okay, so keep going. So it's boring. You're supposed to.
It was like, this was the thing that I'm supposed to do. And I was always so inundated with the easy believism, like the walk the aisle, say the prayer, and all that stuff. And in my mind, I was saved. I mean, I thought that I was covenantally, but I wasn't at that point. So I met a woman in my neighborhood. We would walk our dogs together, and she invited me to her church, and it was an Assembly of God church. So it was completely different. It was like going to a rock concert. And I really loved that church. I loved the people. So I started going to this Pentecostal church, an Assembly of God church.
Oh, man.
And I got exposed to the whole speaking in tongues and the standing up and prophesying. And
I think I'd have went back to drugs, too.
But she didn't. It's a miracle.
I'm speaking from experience. I've been there.
Yeah.
And so I got caught up in that for a little bit, you know, seeking the baptism of the Holy Spirit and all those things. And I'm very scrupulous, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I would ask myself questions like, I know this is biblical, but is this for today? I really got caught up in a tongues Bible study of like, I do my own little personal studies. Mm-hmm. And I got caught up in a continuationism versus cessationism study.
Sure.
And
we've done that in here.
Are the tongues that people are speaking in these churches, are they the biblical tongues or is this something that is manufactured? I don't know what anybody's stance on that is, but I came to the conclusion that tongues are not for today and that
Oh, it was heartbreaking.
That the shitabada Honda, that stuff.
Yeah, shitabada Honda.
Yeah, that stuff's
I always heard like Lachmakizuma Honda.
And I don't want to offend anybody. That's my personal, and I know people that do speak tongues or things like that, and I don't, you know, that's fine. I just personally, I do not believe that they are for today. Mm-hmm.
Could I ask you one question about that?
What?
I'm not,
Go ahead.
If God wanted to use it in somebody.
Yeah.
Could he?
Yes.
Then it's fine. Because you believe that God can do whatever he wants.
Absolutely.
And so I've heard of a man who was able to suddenly speak Zambian. He hasn't spoken since, but he spoke it in a moment and shared the gospel with another man that was from Zambia.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing story. But he said, that's the first time I ever spoke another language. This is the last time I ever did it. It's not like he just got the language downloaded and he knows it. He just spoke it in that moment. So I think that God can use it. And that sounded more biblical, actually, about the language barrier that they broke down.
Right then and there. Boom.
And that was the end of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Not the I should have bought a Honda.
Not the tongues of angels, because the angels, Angelos' messenger, not the shit about a Honda, or the dog, the shit of cockapoo-poo. Isn't that what they call a shih tzu and a cockapoo mix, the shit of cockapoo-poo?
It is now.
You can laugh into the mic. You don't have to miss.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny. That's definitely what I call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now. From the.
Do what? What did you say, Rick? Oh, so oh my I wish God. You guys could see them. They're all covering their faces and yes. stuff. Was that a bad word? I mean, technically, it's an Anglo-Saxon word, and it just means poop.
Shit a cockapoo-poo?
Yes. It's a shih tzu and a cockapoo. It's a shit a cockapoo-poo.
Yeah, okay.
You have me geeking.
Oh my gosh.
Better than tweaking.
It is.
Was that a drug? That was a drug joke.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Good job,
it
Rick.
Was, there we go. The Rick and Rick show.
So yeah, I was going to that church and I learned a lot like about community and fellowship at that church. And but I just slowly came out of that like I don't think this is for today, for me.
Right.
Anyway. So I started to look at other churches, and then I got introduced to John MacArthur, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Strange Fire Conference.
I am very yeah. familiar, yep.
So that's
R.C. Sproul and
yeah.
Yep.
That's how I came out of that was Strange Fire. Mm. So I think it was a good thing for me, but then I got into him and oh gosh, Paul Washer.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, I have an anxiety disorder, so.
Yeah. And if you're willing to share it later on, I want you to share that about what that's like.
Yeah.
You don't have to right now unless you just
okay.
want to.
Yeah. But yeah, I got into the Paul Washer thing just like about the sinner's prayer. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard that before. You know, it's always walk the aisle, say the prayer, you're saved.
Yes.
And so as far as I was concerned, I said the prayer when I was like 14 or 15, mm-hmm. and I was saved, but yeah. I wasn't.
Right.
And Paul Washer exposed that, and I was really angry about it at first.
Mm-hmm. I passed a sign on the way to Savannah the other day, and there was like the sinner's prayer poster on the side, and it says, say this. So it's like, hey, let me get you saved and say in the sentence as you drop by.
It's like fast food Jesus.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep. Supersize it.
So.
Yep.
The mentality sometimes.
So I went through this long period of, you know, I was upset because, you know, the pastor told me I was saved, but there's no fruit. You know, there was never any fruit at all. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what we are taught all around America. I mean, I believe the majority of the church were in this watered down sinner's prayer gospel. And I'm very passionate about speaking against that right mm-hmm. now. Very strongly because yeah. for somebody to tell me that I was saved and I know they didn't know, but still it's like going through that self-deception and that deception. It's like,
I think that we've had, I would say in our testimonies, I'd say probably 25% of them
yeah.
have said something similar.
Oh, yeah.
That they felt like they, if they had believed what they were originally told, they would have went to destruction.
Yeah.
Because they thought that everything was cool and that the grace of God was so awesome that just saying this easy prayer was what it was all it took for them. And then they come to this realization later that there was a much more deeper dedication and faith in him yeah. that mattered to that individual. That individual recognized that in themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, you're not alone. I think that's a common thing.
Yeah, I just didn't want to go to hell. Like, you know, that's the majority of the people. They just don't want to go to hell.
You know, I had a similar experience. I read, I don't know if you've ever heard of A.W. Pink.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I read his book, Studies on Saving Faith. And I'll never forget this. I was on a break and I was reading the book. And he was talking about the sinner's prayer. And he said, if you are concerned about saving yourself from hell, you are committing the sin of self-preservation. And I was like, oh my gosh. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just thought, how is this? Like, how did I miss this? And you really do. You get down deep and you're like, wait a minute, does this mean something to me or not? Like, what? Why am I doing this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I went through a long period of anxiety. I was taking verses out of context. I was constantly worrying about my salvation, but I would get triggered. Oh my gosh, I thought I blasphemed the Holy Spirit and I couldn't be saved.
Yeah.
And other verses like in Hebrews and things like that went through a long, long period of confusion, anxiety. I was having like nervous breakdowns. I mean, I was scared. And I have this lady who I was doing a Bible study with. I was in Bible study fellowship. They're all around the world. And they're a dispensational Bible study. And there was this one lady that was in my Bible study, and she was Reformed. So she was the only Reformed lady in there. Mm-hmm. And she was partial preterist, but I didn't know what that was at first. But she had such a passion about the scriptures that nobody else in that class did. And I was like, I really need to do a Bible study with her because mm-hmm. I wanted to go deeper. And, you know, I was struggling with all kinds of different things, but I always wanted to go deeper. And I feel like there's such a surface Christianity where it's just like a social club. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to go deeper in the scripture. She was going deeper. And so she invited me over and we did a summer Bible study at her house. And I started hanging out with her and her husband. And I had a lot of anxiety issues. And I was constantly on the phone with her. And she's like, well, why don't you just, you know, counsel with my pastor. And I was like, okay. And she said, he'll do it for free. And I said, okay. So I started counseling with him. The first time I met him and her husband and the pastor, we all went to, I don't know if you're familiar with Damon's. It's a restaurant.
Yeah.
In Myrtle Beach.
In Myrtle Beach. Yeah. I'm familiar with that one.
They took me out to eat there.
It's like a steakhouse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They took me out to eat there. And I was asking the pastor questions because I have all these questions, you know, about the Bible, things, you know, about my salvation or losing my salvation. At this point, I thought I was losing my salvation like I was losing my keys every 5 minutes.
Right.
It was like every sin, I lost my salvation. Mm-hmm. And it was just incorrect misunderstanding of scripture.
But debilitating.
Debilitating, yeah.
Terrifying, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So I met with him and I asked him a couple questions. And I was like, what does this passage mean? And he would say, well, that happened in the destruction of the destruction of Jerusalem between 66 and 70 AD. And he said that a couple times. I never heard that in my entire life.
Yeah.
You know, so it was completely foreign. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know, excuse me, what are you talking about? And, you know, then he was Reformed too. And at this point, I wasn't Reformed. I was completely against election and Calvinism and all that stuff.
So can you hit me real quick with the definition of Reformed, which I feel like I should know, but am having trouble with remembering?
Reformed is the same thing as Calvinism.
Okay.
It's just, they don't like to be called Calvinists, I think.
Okay. That works. Thank you.
That's a great, simple way of answering that question.
I love that.
Think Kelly
Get
Coy.
Get it done.
Think Kelly Coy, but less Kelly Coy. That's it. You know, as far as Calvinism.
It's Kelly Coy Light.
It's Coy Light. You don't know Kelly Coy, but you'll know him someday.
Okay. So he started saying all these things, and I come from a dispensationalist background. Rapture, 7 years tribulation.
Antichrist.
God's, yeah, Antichrist, mm-hmm. You know, God pouring out his wrath on the whole world.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, my whole family comes from that background, and that's all I've ever known. Right. And I didn't ever know anything else. And he started talking about this, and I left, and I thought, I'm never talking to that man again.
Yeah, he's trying to lead you astray.
Yeah, it was weird.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I can't associate with them in the sense of I just can't be a part of their church. I can't talk, you know.
Sure.
So then I started having really bad anxiety problems. And she said, well, he'll counsel you. And at this point, I was so desperate. I was like, okay, you know, something has to be done.
Now, how long would you say that you had been clean by this point?
This was in 21.
Okay, so you were clean 3 years.
Yeah.
So would you say that this over, like this exhausting anxiety that you have?
Yeah.
That did you have any kind of inclination or anything that was coming at you feeling like you wanted to go back to what you used to? Or were you like sincerely over?
No, I was sincerely over it. Like
the past drug use, I mean.
Yeah.
You weren't going back.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I was over it.
Yeah.
I have a related question. I was wondering, did the anxiety come when just kind of started in when you were clean, or did it wait a couple years to really become a problem, or was it just underlying sort of anyway?
I think I'm an anxious person naturally, so about anything. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes to like heaven and hell and eternal
more so
issues, it amps it up that much more.
I guess what I'm getting at is I was wondering if part of what you were treating was anxiety with drugs, or is that just a thing that happened later in life, as things do?
I think I've always had an underlying anxiety, and I really didn't. I've never, like, I'm meeting myself for the first time, you know, the past couple years, because I haven't been sober since I was like 14, 15 years old, and I'm 33. So, like, a big chunk of my life that
More than half of your life, you were.
Yeah, that I've been alive is just me on drugs, and I have no idea what I'm like, what I'm not like on drugs. And so I probably did have anxiety and I just didn't know it. I mean,
yeah, you absolutely could have. Yeah.
So a lot of it is misunderstanding. A lot of it is ignorance. So much of it has been ignorance. So he started counseling me for like two years, I think. And he would just go over different things with me, like, what are you troubled about? And he would try to tell me, if you weren't saved, you wouldn't be worried about this. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's so much truth to that, because before any of this, I didn't care about anything.
Right.
You know, like, I never thought of eternal matters or where I was going to spend eternity or God or heaven or hell or any of it.
So you can thank Paul Washer for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul Washer.
Thanks, Paul Washer.
Yeah, he can upset someone's apple cart really quick.
Yeah, really quick.
He's really good at it, which it's not a bad thing, but I don't know.
Yeah. But you agree with him.
Right. Absolutely. Yes.
So what he did was a good thing.
Yes.
It opened up a whole new can of worms for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I started going to this church, and we were in Matthew in Sunday school and Isaiah in church, and they would do Hebrews on Wednesday nights. And I've been to a lot of churches in Myrtle Beach, but this one is so different. Like, they just go really deep in the scriptures, mm-hmm. all about context, audience. This is where I've learned context, audience relevance was through these people.
Right.
It rocked my world. Mm-hmm. I mean, absolutely.
Wow.
If you have proper hermeneutics and proper context, proper audience relevance, it can change a lot.
Mm-hmm. Which you never turn off.
Revolutionized like my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Completely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I suddenly started to see the world as a very beautiful place, and I never did before.
Yeah.
I thought it had to burn.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
I thought it had to burn.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm glad it doesn't.
That was pretty deep.
Yeah. It's true.
So I just started learning and just started digging in the scriptures. And I believe through this journey, God has revealed himself to me in a way, you know, it's like before I thought I knew Jesus or I thought I knew God. And it's like sometimes I read the scriptures and it's like, you know, I grew up with this God of love. Mm-hmm. And God is love. And I definitely, you know, put emphasis on that. But I've never heard of a God of wrath or a God of glory or majesty. Mm-hmm. And just reading the Old Testament, reading the Psalms, just, I began to have a reverence for God that I've never had before. Began to have a reverence for Jesus, like reading Revelation, just reading the passages where they're worshiping him. And it's like, I just want to be there for eternity and I want to worship you.
Yeah.
And, you know, praise and blessing and honor be to the Lamb of God. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful. It's just so beautiful.
Yeah. We did a couple episodes on the worship songs of Revelation.
Those
powerful songs.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people like.
And it made the career of Phillips, Craig, and Dean. Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite books of worship is Revelation. Yeah. Revelation and Psalms. They're my two.
Mm-hmm.
Just really powerful, powerful verses.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Can we guess yours?
What?
Rick?
Guess my what?
Your favorite book.
Can I guess your favorite biblical uncredited writer?
Yeah, you can guess my favorite book. Go ahead. What is it?
Lazarus.
No, it's Hebrews.
That's Hebrews? My favorite book.
Hebrews is my favorite book.
That's my favorite book.
Lazarus wrote the Gospel of John. Everybody can suck it. I hate it for you that he did. But Hebrews is my favorite book. You don't believe Lazarus wrote the Gospel of John, do you?
No. I think John wrote the Gospel of John.
John can't. He can't. He couldn't have. I can prove that it, you could, I can prove to you that he couldn't have. Now, let's not go on that tangent.
No, not now.
Because I'll prove it to you by letting you listen to my podcast.
Yes.
I've got five parts on it.
You were just trying to tell me a minute ago that dinosaurs came about by angels.
Sons of God slept with the daughter of men. Yeah.
I'm definitely not going to listen to you on Lazarus writing John.
So now that we understand the way that Kirsten's going to be.
The way that I see.
She just totally blew me out in public because I've never stated that in public in my life.
Yeah, if not.
I didn't know that.
So it was a stupid theory. I'm sorry. No, it's okay. It's all right. You brought me out of the closet. So now suck it. Here we go. You ready? Yeah, so here it is, Andy.
All right.
Back in the Old Testament.
Nephilim.
The Nephilim.
Yes.
Hardly knew him. Sorry.
Great.
I like that
Andy.
Joke so much I had to drag it out again.
We'll just bring it back.
Yeah. I love
So what I said was, is it possible that the giants that the Bible are talking about in the Old Testament were the dinosaurs themselves? And that the dinosaurs, we believe them as like reptilian, as in creature animals, but we also know that reptilian creature animals can speak. They have languages with each other and understand one another. So could it be possible that those wicked creatures that fell from heaven, that mated with man, created these awful reptilian creatures that ended up becoming giants? Now, it's just as feasible as some of the other crazy crap I've heard in my life. And it's just a stupid theory. Do I believe it? You're dang right I do. Well, no, I don't. I'm just kidding. I don't. I do not believe it. I just said that would be a way to explain the dinosaur bones.
When we come out
it
with
was
our
a long time ago.
We come out with our Jasher study in 2199.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We finally come out with that.
We need to get Kirsten involved in that.
We talk
about we should bring you on the Jasher study.
Oh my gosh.
Apocrypha?
It's not Apocrypha. The Bible references it in Joshua and in 2 Kings.
Yes, it does.
Oh, really?
Yes, it does. It says, have you not read it in the book of Jasher? And it's like, no, because the church won't let me.
Yes. Yeah, so.
Or Enoch. Enoch.
Enoch used to be. Mm-hmm. But the first Enoch used to be in the Bible.
Yeah. Then they took it out. And then
well,
put
it's
it
still
in,
the Ethiopian, but you
and
can't.
And the Eritrean.
It's in Jude, right? Reference.
It's quoted in Jude.
It's quoted verbatim in Jude. Yep, and referenced by Peter.
But when we bring that book out,
we'll get back to it.
We'll study it. It talks about some things that.
But don't they talk about hell in the book of Enoch?
Huh?
Hades.
Hades, but not an eternal, conscious, fiery torment.
Mm-mm. Well, it was prior. It was prior to the end, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, dinosaurs had feathers.
They did.
Almost certainly.
Is there anything wrong with the sons of God sleeping with the daughters of men and having feathers? There's nothing wrong with that.
No, it's just a fun fact that have only been talking about for a couple of years.
That's right.
Why can't it just be the godly line of Seth?
Why can't it be?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it could be. I was just playing with the bones.
We discovered the creation of lizard people.
That's what I'm saying. See, that, and that is where Hillary Clinton came from.
I think that's it. That's it.
She's the reptilians. Oh, I've tried to say this for months.
Hilarious.
But I was too afraid until Kirsten just totally just threw
me
under the bus.
So you're telling me the TV series V is real?
Absolutely. It is.
And they eat rats and all.
So yeah, they shrunk down and, you know, to human size and form. Very handy for using a toaster and stuff.
That was a very awesome TV series.
Well, let's get back to Kirsten.
All right. Sorry.
Kirsten, so...
So now that we know that Hillary Clinton's a reptilian...
Yeah. So basically, you're in this church now and you have a pastor that's a partial preterist.
Yes.
But that doesn't tell me what you are today.
Right.
Right.
A follower of Jesus Christ.
Thank you.
Yay.
Very good. Yeah. So is there anything else that you would like to share?
Just that. So this pastor, he really was so instrumental in helping me to learn context and audience relevance, time statements, things like that. And that really brought me out of so much of my anxiety. So there's so much ignorance. And that's why I do like that YouTube channel. It's like, you know, this stuff needs, somebody needs to teach this stuff. Like, I got to tell people about this. Yeah. Like, it's too good not to share. Mm-hmm. And I have... You know, there's so many Christians on my Facebook, but it's caused a lot of problems.
Sure.
Because people do not believe the way that I do. And I'm very, you know, I'm honest about it, that I think Jesus Christ came back in the first century. Mm-hmm. And that is 100% my belief. I don't believe that he's coming back. And people have a problem with that. And people get upset with that. It upsets them. But it does not mean that I'm not a Christian.
Yeah.
And it's caused...
They'll try to tell you that you aren't because you don't believe in the physical bodily resurrection.
Right.
They'll say that to you.
Yeah.
That's what makes you a heretic in their eyes.
Yeah.
But
you're also denying the gospel.
And at least they consider you a thinking human and human.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them, if you don't believe in their God, they just don't even... You're not literally not a human.
That's true.
Well, it's like if you don't believe the traditional view, then you're not a Christian. You can't be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do understand, because like I said, when I first met that pastor and I met my friends who held some of these different views, I was completely turned off. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, I don't want to hear about this stuff. But when I really learned the truth, the time statements in Revelation, you know, things which must shortly come to pass, mm-hmm. it's like, wow. I started listening to Ken Gentry.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good. Gary DeMar a little bit. And I know, don't you have Gary on this show?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're good friends with Gary.
Yeah.
Not so much with Ken Gentry. Not because we don't want to. We've tried to get Dr. Gentry to come on here, but he won't.
And I've heard that Kirk Cameron is partial preterist.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't. He's never said. What I do know is that he wrote the foreword for Pete and Rachel Rue's book,
yep.
In Times Explained,
yeah,
which I think was a remarkable thing for him to do because our view was represented in there, and that was very nice. I really don't know where he stands. I know that he is a warrior out in the field, like for the Christian message.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and he's definitely all over it, but that's all I do know.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. Remember that video you sent me about Steve Dace and Gary DeMar?
I did.
They outed him.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
Why?
Gary kind of did in a little bit.
I mean, it's either Gary DeMar outing Kirk Cameron or Kirsten Barton Brooks outing Rick Welch on his reptilian theory.
Dun, dun, dun.
It was finally it came out.
Yes.
I've been...
waiting to do it, just didn't know how to do it.
No, because it's Kirsten. Absolutely erroneous. But it was fun to think. But I have a really good...
What do you mean erroneous?
It's erroneous.
Well, you... Are you crazy?
Real. It's not real.
You're not Christian.
Now, I do believe the portal. Boom.
Oh, boy.
We'll get into the portal someday.
Oh, my gosh.
We'll tell you about it, Kirsten. All right. So, anything else you want to go? So, you're saying that you've been got a little bit of Gary DeMar and who else?
Well, Ken Gentry mainly.
Yeah. Ken Gentry mainly.
Yeah, Ken Gentry mainly. And I was post-mill for a little bit. But now I'm not, which doesn't matter. But I'm fulfilled eschatology. Mm-hmm. I believe that everything's been fulfilled.
You didn't get that from Ken Gentry.
No. I started reading that book, J. Stuart Russell, The Parousia, and that made me dig deeper, and I just kept going, and yeah, so now I believe that everything's been fulfilled, but a lot of people don't like that. People are worried that I'm in heresy, and they have to rescue me and bring me out, and all these things, but I still don't believe that it affects my salvation.
It's funny because earlier in your life, you started making choices and people were trying to rescue out of that world.
Yeah.
Now you've come full on in your rational mind and you make a decision, a rational decision, and people still think that you've went off the rails.
Well, you need to do everything exactly like somebody else would do it. Otherwise, you're kind of doing it wrong.
Exactly.
Well, you know, she was following people what they were doing drugs. Doing well, what they were doing.
Yeah, so maybe she should just follow what everybody says. It's a good point.
But
live your life, man. Live your life and be happy.
Thanks, Andy.
That's right. A justification for everything.
Yeah.
I have gotten caught up in the whole full preterism thing, and I've made it more about full preterism and just like Ward. I like what Ward Fenley called. He says it's an intellectual idolatry.
Yeah.
And yeah, I have.
There's a form like that, yeah.
I will wholeheartedly admit I've gotten caught up in that. But like my pastor and Ward Fenley, they've both come alongside of me and like, don't make it about full preterism. It's about Jesus Christ.
That's right.
And that's the main thing.
It is. That is the main thing.
And it's.
Full preterism didn't die for you.
Right, exactly.
Right.
So I've had people like Ward Fenley come along aside of me and help me to try to stay focused on Christ. Because you do. You get lost up in the jots and the tittles of the who, you know, who's the Antichrist, who's the beast, or who is...
Yeah, now instead of focusing on what it could possibly be in the future, you're digging and trying to figure out who it could have been in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's interesting.
It is. It's fascinating, and there's nothing wrong with enjoying it.
Yeah.
It's whenever it becomes, like you said, intellectual idolatry. It's where you just, now you follow the system more, and you're not following the leading and admonition of the Lord.
Yeah, so I think the Lord puts people in my life to try to keep me focused, but I've just come on this trip and just really, you know, wanted to seek more of Him and be with Him in nature, go on hiking trips and trails and things like that. And of course, I wanted to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
And so I listened to, I saw this video from Derek Lambert and Bart Ehrman the other day. I just saw the title that said, Jesus's failed prophecy. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I know all the answers to this. You know, I was very curious to see what they would say. Mm-hmm. And so I clicked on it and I listened to it. And Derek Lambert, you know, he wasn't an idiot. I was very surprised. Like, he was into full preterism. Mm-hmm. And then I listened to his testimony and it scared me. It really put fear in me because he was a professing Christian and he went full-blown atheist. Mm-hmm. And that scared me because his testimony sounded just like mine. Right. And I thought...
He shared his testimony here.
Yeah. Right. That's what you said. I haven't heard that one.
Yeah. Except he goes to the next level.
Right.
Yeah, which is to leave Christianity altogether.
Yes. And... it really like sunk me to a very low place. And I thought, how could someone see full preterism or what the Bible teaches concerning prophecy, just Matthew 24 alone. It's talking about the destruction of the temple. So the next question is, when did that temple get destroyed? Well, 66 to 70 AD within that generation. So that prophecy was fulfilled. To me, that strengthens my faith.
Sure.
Jesus Christ is the Messiah. He is the Son of God. He is the true prophet. He is who he said he was. So how does this guy fall away from Christianity? It just really scared me.
Can I ask you a question?
What?
What are you afraid of? That he's right? Are you afraid that he's right and you're wasting your time?
I'm afraid that it could happen to me.
You're afraid that you could accidentally become an atheist?
Yeah.
I mean, do you hear how crazy that sounds? Accidentally.
Well, I see, I believe, and I could be wrong. I'm not judging his heart. I don't know the guy, but it seems like he's so hungry for knowledge, chasing after knowledge. And that's something that I'm doing.
I know Derek Lambert, and I'm a friend of Derek's.
Right.
And I know him very well.
Yeah.
And he does know the scripture better than most.
Yeah.
He does.
That's scary.
He's a true skeptic, and he trusts in scholarship.
Right.
Okay? And that for me, in my opinion, that's great. Study all that you want.
Yeah.
But the scholars aren't the absolutes
right.
in the world. They represent a version of an absolute, but they aren't the total absolute. And even within Christianity, as you can see, we're splintered into so many different beliefs and sects, yeah, right?
Absolutely.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. If your faith relies on an absolutely perfect and unerring Bible, mm-hmm. you are in a dangerous place.
Sure.
Because things can be physically proven inaccurate about the timelines and maybe the names of some of the people, especially the Old Testament, because it's a long time ago.
Yeah, we did that with Craig Olson.
Right.
Who's a devout Christian, but gives different timelines.
Yeah, if your faith rests on the Bible being word perfect, mm-hmm. you've put yourself in probably a dangerous place if you want your faith to remain intact.
Well, the hard part, too, is if you also start nitpicking at the errors, you start tearing it apart.
Yeah.
Either way.
Exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, you go both ways.
This episode is brought to you by Carolina Cases. Whether in your home, auto, suitcase, or hotel room, you can be assured that with Carolina Cases, you can protect what matters most. Carolina Cases are TSA approved, so you know your items are secured in a shock and impact-proof hard case. These lightweight, durable cases come with pre-cut protective high-quality foam to fit your pistols by make and model, compact size, or full size. They also come in a universal configuration for multiple options. Carolina Cases are more than a pistol case. They are available in fully customizable foam to protect what matters. You can go to their website at www.carolinacases.net to see their designer protective lid designs. Each is laser engraved to give you unmatched style at home or on the range. So protect what matters most. Visit www.carolinacases.net. That's www.carolinacases.net. And also, enter code Burrows at checkout to receive free shipping. That's right. Just enter the code Burrows at checkout and you'll receive free shipping.
So, Kirsten, I'll say this. So, I know that fear. That's why I asked you what it was. Because I know it.
Oh, I've been close to it recently.
I was raised in it.
Close to it recently.
It's petrifying.
Mm. Well,
for me,
there's a thought.
Well, it'll
drive you nuts.
Well, you think for a moment that it's almost, at least from my perspective, it's almost like in a moment it's liberating, because you latch on so hard to keep digging in the study, and digging into finding what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And when you start to see something. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Is this real?
Yeah.
So you reach out and you say, well, is this real? And you meet almost nothing, because nobody either wants to talk to you about it, if you've had that experience, or they immediately discredit kind of your perspective because they don't give enough time to understand what you did to build it there. I had that quite happen to me a lot, where I see something and you want to validate it to some extent and to see if it's right, and you meet nothing, and there's nothing there. Nobody will spend time, because they're too, one, most people are busy, especially people that are, I think, smarter than me. They're extremely busy.
Yeah.
And they don't have the time for it.
Right.
So you're usually left in your own devices to think about what you're thinking.
Oh yeah. I got caught up in 1 Corinthians 15 about, see, in my understanding, I knew that there was only one second coming, and I knew that the second coming and the resurrection of the dead took place at the same time, mm-hmm. and I knew, in my mind, I went through the scriptures over and over and over. There's no third coming. There's just one second coming, and it took place in the first century, mm-hmm. And
first, it coincided with the destruction of the temple and the entire system, the Mosaic covenant law.
Right.
The end.
And so the second coming and the resurrection of the dead took place at the same time. So in that passage, I think it says, then comes the end, where it talks about Jesus delivering up the kingdom to the Father. Mm-hmm. And the way that I first read that, it was like, so there's no more salvation for today. And I think that's where Israel only, they use that passage to defend that. And I literally, like, I cried in my closet. Like, I was in a really bad place because yeah. I misunderstood the language.
Sure.
And I thought, there's no more salvation for today. Like,
you got to sit in a room with Sam Frost for 5 hours. You think you misunderstand language.
But you can add one.
But you can add one more.
To which you can add one.
Which. Right. You got to say it right.
Which. Is it W-H-I-C-H or is it W-I-T-C-H?
Ah, so many witches. What?
Yes.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I get caught up in these little Bible conundrums and sometimes I freak out like that. But
So let me ask you, I'm not your counselor, but I just have a curious question because, again, knowing the fear.
Yeah.
Like, listening to Derek Lambert and saying he's not stupid, he's incredibly intelligent.
Yeah.
And he's asking all the right questions, and he has a lot of people on his show that are saying that this is bunk.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you go look at MythVision, he's got thousands of videos where this is bunk. And that's a difficult thing, especially for me to try to be friendly with him. It's a struggle at times for us.
Yeah.
Or at least for me. Do you trust God?
I struggle with it.
Okay. So now, if you know that the struggle is with the trust,
yeah,
then to me, that's the answer to the conundrum. That's the answer to it.
Right.
The reason you feel this way is because you struggle with the trust.
Yeah.
God is more than capable of handling the situation.
Right.
He's more than capable. If you can see him as sovereign and all-powerful, and you have longed to know him, trust me when I tell you this. Trust me. Trust me. Because I'm not God. Just trust me. He is more than capable of fulfilling exactly what he said that he would do.
Right.
Nothing can separate those who are in Christ Jesus. No thing, height nor depth, nothing can separate us. So what's in your mind? I see you're like...
Oh, I was just going to say, well, what about Derek Lambert?
What about him?
Well, he was a professing Christian.
Does he want Christ now?
No.
Do you see the difference?
Right.
Do you want to know Christ? Do you want to know him better?
Yes.
There's the difference. And you can study and you can meet with skeptics and you can talk about it. But listen, for me, the experiences that I have had with God... with the Holy Spirit, with seeing him work not only in me, but in my private time when it's just me and God, in our intimate prayer time, and he's rewarded me openly, just like his son said would happen. And to see people's lives completely changed because of him.
Yeah.
And their lives are changed completely. And even Andy, who is a non-believer and an atheist, can see the positive effect that this has. Scream it out, Andy. You agree.
Yes.
You say, if it's good for you and it works for you, then yeah. You're happy for them. Isn't that what you say?
Yeah, I've said it on more than one occasion. If it gets you through life and it's constructive and positive and it makes you happy, then man, you've hacked a code. I don't care how you arrive at that.
When he listened to Rick Welch's, he was like, that is one of the most amazing stories ever, because this guy was a heroin addict for 18 years.
Wow.
And he becomes a Christian. Now he's over the facility where he got clean.
Oh,
and
wow.
Has been
That's
for
great.
Years.
Wow.
You'll have to go listen to it. It's an incredible story.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And the fact is, we don't need Andy to conform to our image. I don't need Andy to conform to my image.
Right.
I don't see Andy as my enemy, but even if he was, I would be commanded to love him anyhow.
Right.
Am I wrong?
I actually love him just the way he is.
I love him just the way you
are. Oh,
don't
shucks.
Go changing. To try and please Rick.
I'm going to go put hand sanitizer on a small cup my cat just put on me.
Oh, I thought you were just like getting ready for the night because I was singing to you.
Greg looked really got hold of.
Oh, that's it. I've got a little hand sanitizer on the armpits. The armpits, you know.
Just get cooled off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, put a little in your hair, you know, a little something.
Yeah,
something.
Hair, huh?
That's funny. He's going to get some hand sanitizer. So I've really enjoyed this talk. This has been great. Let's wrap this one up. Would you stay on for our next study?
What do you mean?
We have a Bible study coming up next.
We usually do yeah, two I want, podcasts.
Yeah, I
want to
stay on.
Yeah, good.
Can I finish?
Oh, you're not done.
No, I'm not done.
Good. I thought you were.
No.
All right, so here's the deal. You can take up as much time as you want. Let's hear it.
I'm going to.
Good.
Bam!
I already like her a lot.
Yeah.
Just so you know, she's fitting in incredibly well.
What time is it?
It's time for you to start talking.
Yeah, yes. That's exactly what I was
I mean, you're
going
to start running the freaking show, then get to moving that mouth, lady. 7:29.
So I've been getting into things like exercise. Mm-hmm. That's a very healthy outlet for me, like hiking and exercising, things like that. Lifting, that really helps me. Just helps my anxiety, my depression, my stress, all that stuff. And the Lord's brought me to a really great place, mm-hmm. really blessed me with so much. And I really desire to seek Him, and I desire to be with Him for eternity. Mm-hmm. I believe He's not like a special revelation, but I guess it is. When I read scripture sometimes, like I was telling you earlier, I feel like this. Sometimes this like deep reverence for God that I've never had, mm-hmm. never had that in my entire life. And I feel like I've been, you know, we talk about God, but I've never put attributes behind Him until I started reading the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Does that make sense? Like you just, yeah, God loves me or God loves everybody and mm-hmm. the end. Jesus died for my sins, but it's so much deeper. It's not just, you don't just mouth it. Like, that's why I love studying the Bible. There's so much, and we can only scratch the surface.
Yeah. It truly is a remarkable living Bible, a living word.
Yeah.
It really is remarkable. And I know that feeling about it when you read it. It's almost like you want to hug it.
Yeah.
Like, you, it's like, oh, this, I know that feeling. There's nothing quite as good as the Word of God.
Yeah. So I read the Psalms.
Except maybe, like, doing taxes. That was a bad joke. Nobody laughed because it sucks so bad. Anyway, back to you.
Andy can feed in the laughter.
Yeah. I'll get a bunch of like donkeys honking.
Awesome. Please do it.
Make a note and put it there.
Please do it.
But I don't know. I feel like I took up so much time with my drug addiction and my drug use, but I just wanted to, I guess, explain what God brought me out of.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'll be 6 years clean July 27th.
Very cool.
I believe God is sovereign, and I can look back over my life and see His hand on me. Mm-hmm. Like He brought me out of that. He brought me to Myrtle Beach. He got me a job. You know, He got me a better job now. It's just, you know, boom, boom, boom. Everything fell in place. I'm at the church. I love my church. I love my pastor. And I love the people I go to church with. And I don't know. It's just an experience.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's the ideal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And I just, you know, I struggle sometimes. But there's sometimes where it's like, God, I want to be on this journey with you, mm-hmm. but I'm scared. I am scared of God. Does that make sense? Because He's holy.
Yeah.
It's not, He's just become more real to me than He ever has. And I know He's so holy. You just read things in the Old Testament about the children of Israel, and it's terrifying.
How do you do with the verse, like, God does not give you a spirit of fear? How do you do with that?
I don't personally apply it to myself.
You don't?
No.
Who do you apply it to? Everyone else?
Yeah.
So that's fun when you can pick and choose, when we pick and choose who we can apply things to.
Yeah.
He didn't give you a spirit of fear, but of a sound mind and self-discipline.
Yeah.
That's scripture. Sounds to me like you have a pretty sound mind and you're working on some self-discipline.
Yeah.
So now you just need to understand that he didn't give you that spirit of fear. That's you.
Yeah.
It's not him. It's you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know,
it's okay to be reverenced toward God.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to be irreverent. We want to be reverence. He deserved. I mean, we also work out our salvation through fear and trembling. Isn't that what the scripture says?
Oh, yes, it says.
That fear and trembling, and that's true fear. It's reverence. And also, what's the trembling? I mean, I felt that. It's awe-inspiring. Yeah. I love to interrupt you. Did I screw up your thought?
No.
I was just...
And as we wrap this up...
Yeah.
No, we're going to keep going. We got 2 more hours.
I mean, she's got the clock. She's running the time clock tonight.
No, but I just wanted to glorify God for everything he's done for me. I was just doing that on the drive over here to meet you guys before we ate at Cracker Barrel together. Just how blessed I am. You know, I turn on the news and you see this stuff going on over in Israel and all these other places. And I just, you know, it makes me feel so horrible because I'm complaining about my life or, you know, my little anxieties and my fears. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, Lord, you know, please forgive me.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not always on the news, so I'm not always thinking about that stuff. Mm-hmm. And
I don't want to encourage everybody to be completely self-obsessed, but other people's misfortunes do not invalidate your personal difficulty, even when it is greatly less than their misfortunes.
Sure.
That's not an excuse to be completely self-centered.
Right.
But it's true all the same.
Yeah. I mean, there's a healthy way to look at this, to say, look, you know, I am not in as bad a situation as someone else is. And then, but that doesn't negate the fact that I'm in a situation.
Exactly.
That's what you said. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I thank him for everything he's done in my life. Mm-hmm. He's saved me in every single way, from drugs, covenantally, just so many different ways.
Yeah.
And I just give him praise and glory for it.
That's awesome.
And I long to worship him in eternity.
You can start right now. Start singing, lady. You can't do it here, but you're going to do it in heaven. Yeah. Just kidding. So every guest that we have, we always have a final question.
Okay.
Okay. You want to ask it, Rick?
Sure. When you die and your body stops working, where do you go?
In the presence of the Lord.
Cool.
Where do you go?
Applebee's. That's not true at all.
Eternity of Applebee's.
No version of afterlife includes an Applebee's. It's not bad enough to be hell. It's not good enough to be heaven.
Yeah.
Andy, am I allowed to ask you where you go?
Did you ever seen a firefly? Just like, boop, the light turns on, light turns off.
Yeah.
It's kind of what a human life is in my head, except on a much larger time scale. It's just like, bam, and then bam. And the field of fireflies is beautiful, but, you know, kind of the lights, they individually light, and then they go away.
That's a different one than you answered last time.
I said it wrong last time, and it annoyed me so bad.
How did you say it last time?
I can't remember.
I know how you said it.
People,
you said, where did you come from? Where were you at before you were born?
Oh, I was talking about a different time. I did the firefly thing. I feel like I've said that before, and I made it sound like I was talking about the lives of the bugs, not the time of the blank.
Right.
And yes, I may have said it another way. That's not what I was thinking of. But that's kind of the way I like to think about it. It's just like, can sit outside our yard. We get fireflies. It's kind of nice. So you can sit outside and just kind of like ruminate and watch the fireflies. And that's where
As Andy looks at every firefly and said, there's a life. There's not a life. There's a life. There's not a life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every time I go to a cookout with Andy, he drives me crazy because he looks at the fireflies and is like, well, there's a life. That's a life. There's a life. Just kidding.
It's the multiverse.
It's the multiverse. But, anyway. But it is. We kind of appear out of nothing. It's not literally out of nothing, you know, and then we live a little while and then back there we go.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to quote the Bible right now. What does James say? Your life is like a vapor.
Uh-huh.
What does that say?
We can look it up.
Look it up.
Look it up. We are a Bible podcast. Let's get out some Bibles. That is an Andy quote. Yeah. That's an Andy quote. life is but a vapor is James 4:14. And it goes, Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time.
Why are you Dracula?
It's KJV. I'm doing Elizabethan. I've been watching Bridgerton. Thanks a lot, Carter. So let's do it in a...
I'm not watching Bridgerton. You are.
You are too.
Well, do it full Dracul. If you're going to go Dracul, I need you to lean all the way.
Whereas you know not what shall be. All right. So he says...
Okay. That was good though.
All right. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. That's what James says.
Mm-hmm. It's deep.
It's true. It is.
Yeah.
It is true.
That's the concept. It's the same, you know, idea about the length concept. Of a life.
The only difference is emptiness prior with nothing or a God. That's the difference. We always come back to the same thing. Yeah. We always come back to the same thing. All right.
Andy, I really want to interview you. Maybe you can be on my channel.
I like to tell people about myself. It's great.
You should totally do that. Have you checked your email lately, Andy?
No, I need to get that from you tonight so I can check it this weekend. What, the password?
Oh, you need a password to get in?
Yes.
Your email? Or yeah.
I already gave it to everybody, didn't
you
I?
You did. Did you send an email? Oh, this is for after. This is the thing I need to address because I meant to check it the other day and I was like... I don't know where the password is.
Yeah.
There's
people out there going like, Andy!
I'm going to get into it. This is completely out of whack whenever you'll hear this. This is not time relevant. But I'm going to get into it this weekend because it's my birthday weekend, so I have time off.
Hey, so, happy birthday! Hey,
happy birthday, Andy! Yeah.
How old are you going to be, 46?
47.
Oh, you're turning 47.
That's so close to
50. You old bastard.
That's so close to 50.
I'm 49. Hush your mouth.
That's so close to 50.
I just read so his shirt. Look at his shirt.
Oh, you didn't see it
He's
yet?
Part of the Flat Mars Society.
Oh, my God. I love that. Where did you get that?
I was advertised it online, and I was like, yes, I will. Thank you.
He's got a shirt that says Flat Mars Society.
For God's sakes, please send me the link to that.
I'm sure you could Google it. It's
I mean, your Flat Mars is about the size of a saucer. Mine will look like the size of a dinner plate, but it'll at least still be flat.
Boy, this has been a fun episode.
It was fun, yes.
It's been a joy,
except
Kirsten.
Except for the mic.
Oh, except for the mic problems.
I don't know how much of that to leave in, just to see if any of it's funny, but I doubt it.
Yeah, we'll see. Oh, can I tell something funny? I haven't told a joke like this in quite some time. This is like one of the things that we do, Kirsten, a lot, and I haven't done this in a very long time. Three men die. A physicist, a philosopher, and a local town idiot. They stand before the gates of heaven, and between them and the gates stands who but Larry the 15th Apostle. So Larry tells the three men, sorry boys, but it seems heaven is getting jam-packed. To let you in, you have to beat me intellectually, either through a form of a question or a challenge. And the first to come forward is the physicist, and he tells Larry the 15th Apostle with great confidence, show me the entire mathematical markup of the Higgs boson. To which Larry merely snaps his finger and produces a dozen large whiteboards and proceeds to write up the whole markup from memory. And after careful examination, the physicist reluctantly agrees that he is correct. And with the snap of a finger, Larry sends that physicist straight to hell. This is a joke. The next to come forward is the philosopher. And thinking that the physicist made a grave mistake of challenging Larry with an empirical question, he decides to give a less than empirical challenge of his own. He tells Larry, show me all the works of Socrates, he says with a smirk, knowing Socrates never wrote down his teachings. Larry would be hard-pressed on producing an answer for this. But despite this, Larry produces a stack of papers, and the philosopher reads it with great criticism. There are things there he had never seen or even heard of, and questioned the paper's authenticity, to which Larry remarked, me and Socrates have chatted a lot ever since he got here. And with a snap of a finger, the philosopher was sent to hell. Last to come forward is the local town idiot. And the idiot asks Larry, could I give you a riddle instead? And Larry replies, of course, I love riddles. And so the idiot proceeds, what comes up a hill with six legs? And comes down with four, comes back up with two legs, and back down with no more. So Larry ponders it for a good 5 minutes, but he has no answer for the riddle. And he tells the idiot, well, congratulations, you have left me dumbfounded. And with a snap of a finger, the gates of heaven open, and the idiot proceeds to enter heaven. But right before he does so, he feels Larry tapping on his shoulder, and he turns around. So, Larry asks, what's the answer to your riddle? And the idiot shrugs his shoulders and says, how the heck would I know? Wasn't that a long joke for such a terrible punchline? Yeah.
Insert the donkey laugh.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, Kirsten,
well, now
thank
that we
you.
Know that hell doesn't exist,
there
do
you,
wanna
you go.
Do you want to go 2 more hours? We can.
Yeah, we can, actually. I really appreciate you being on the show. Yeah. Thank you for being so honest and sharing your testimony.
Yeah. Was it too much?
No, it wasn't. It was a blessing.
Are you sure?
What was Karen?
Karen?
Karen, what's her
Rogers?
Name? Rogers. Karen Rogers.
Yeah.
Listen to that one. Amazing story.
Yes,
it is hard, though. It's a rough through.
What's it about?
What an amazing, crazy story. Her life.
Her life was rough. But she was also the youngest female jockey to ever win at Belmont Park in New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was a professional jockey. But she has a harrowing story in her youth.
It's amazing. It's an amazing life story. But what a difficult life.
Yes. And I would be surprised if you don't have an email from Karen. I talked to Karen
regularly.
She emailed
me when she told me that, like, it wasn't working, and it probably is now. It's probably just, I'm not looking forward to it just because of the amount. I'm like, how do you deal with, anyway, I have some time this weekend.
Well, thanks for everything, Andy. You got a lot of work to do editing this bad boy. Rick, appreciate you driving all the way up from Colombia.
Yeah,
man. And we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Later.
Hey guys, this is Rick from the Burrows of Berea. A lot of people have been asking us, hey, what is this Patreon thing? Our old Patreon ad didn't work very well. So here you go, guys. Go to www.patreon. That is patreon.com. Let me do that again. patreon.com/theburrowsofberea. If you go to the Patreon page, you will find that we have different levels that you can give at. We have a $3 level, a $5 level. We've got a $10 level and a $20 level. I thought about putting a $1,000 level there, but you never know how that's going to work out, right, Andy? That's right. So go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea and give us all of your money.
Even a little bit, we'll be fine.
Yeah. And that 5,000 wouldn't hurt my ego.
No, it would hurt nobody.
Thanks, guys. So that's really why.
Yeah, I need access to the computer.
And Greg is a nightmare sometimes and scratches his legs and makes sounds and screams. And
you make him sound like a little terror. And
actually,
I will have you know he's a complete angel. Why?
Yeah, sure Greg, he is. Gregula. He's funny.
Sure he is.
All right. Ooh. Are we rolling, Andy?
See?
Yeah, see?
I can't see.
Maybe you're out of the way. I don't know if she saw it.
Yeah.
I put something up on the window ledge. There's a section of the window ledge there. That is where I put things that he's allowed to.
Yeah.
Well, that one's new. That was new. There it is. That was a penny. So... the vibro slap, not really a part of the program, but other than that, it's like thimbles and pennies and stuff, and he's allowed.
Oh, you should totally vibro slap into the mic.
Well, it would be super loud. I could do it in the back of the room.
Do it. This is and add it to the show, please, at the end.
I'm just doing this for her benefit. You understand that, right? This isn't me just tripping and my cat being extra bad. Greg and I worked this whole thing out ahead of time.
Yeah, sure. He's that well trained. He really is. And
please put this at the end. I really want to hear you know what this is? The vibra slap? It kind of sounds like a rattlesnake in a way.
I see no reason to not put this entire episode
at the end,
of Greg being extra bad and me tripping over my headphone station. Like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know how loud this is going
to
be.
Listen to this.
I don't have my wallet. I'll have to use my actual leg here.
It sounds like something that you would hear like in a cowboy movie.
It is. That thing you're thinking of? That's the vibra slap. Yeah, that thing you're thinking of is a vibra slap. And a lot of 70s music, it's kind of used for punctuation.
Do it one more time. Like, do it one more time. Get ready. Watch this.
Yeah,
that's the sound. And they're standing there like getting ready to draw. All right, we rolling?
It would have been so much better if they actually did it on the. They had to make their own sounds while they were being filmed.
Oh, that would be. Oh, I love this. That's a good.
Wouldn't that be a good?
That would be a good bit.
That would be.
Like an old Western where they're doing their own Foley.
Well, remember,
a great idea.
Remember Monty Python?
Yeah.
The riding the horse with the little coconuts.
The coconuts. You know what we're talking about.
No, I'm just listening to you guys.
Okay. Yeah, we do this sometimes.
It's okay. So sorry. All right, we're rolling. All right, here we go.
Yeah, we're good.